Hi, I'm Stina.
And I'm Father Burns.
And this is the Living Fullness Podcast. On this episode, we're going to have a chat about Anzac Day, about valor, virtue, and self-sacrifice.
If you're new here in the Living Fullness Podcast, we chat about virtue and the acquisition of virtues, how we acquire those. We also chat about sort of growing in the spiritual life and various cultural shifts and trends, how we approach those. And we're so glad to have you join us.
So for this episode, seeing as we're right on the verge of Anzac Day, and we've never actually really done an episode on Anzac Day before, I thought, why not?
I feel like we have.
Have we?
I feel like we have.
When?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Oh, I know when. Anzac Day somewhere. Sorry.
Wishful thinking. Yeah. I don't think we have. Well, if we have, then this is about to become a repeat, but I don't think we have.
Okay.
I think we've talked about it a few times, but we've not actually done an episode on it.
All right, very good.
So I guess, I mean, maybe some perceptions on Anzac Day or just some thoughts on Anzac Day to start with maybe before we kind of dig into a bit of, you know, valor and virtue.
Yeah.
For me, Anzac Day, or rather the last few years, if you've been following my immigration journey type stuff, I have had to travel to go and do this English language test thing several times. And the last time I went a few years ago, I went to Canberra to go and do it. So did the written exam, which went for about 3 hours, and then had a bit of a break before the oral exam was due to take place. I thought, well, what will I do? It's like a decent break where I can't just duck over to a cafe and, you know, have a coffee and then come back. I need to kind of find something else of value to do in this time. And I don't really have like a, you know, dedicated space that I can work from or anything like that. And also brain fried. So
what am I going to do?
And I thought, well, actually where this, you know, exam's taking place, the Australian War Memorial is not that far from here. And I haven't been. So I thought, well, maybe it's, you know, today might be the day that I go.
Like perfect opportunity,
five
right?
5 minutes away. Let's go. I went and when I'd returned – and people asked what I'd done in the break and I told them I went to the War Memorial. They were all like, you did that in your break? And I was like, yes, I know. Why did I do that to myself? So I wouldn't recommend it if you've only got a few hours. Yes. It's a lot to take in. But it was something that I didn't end up regretting because it gave – it's just one of those opportunities where it gives you a sense of – just how much has happened in this country. And as a migrant coming to this country, I get a sense of like a very sobering reality, but also there's a sense of, well, I've come from elsewhere to this place that has had people that have had to offer a lot. They've had to sacrifice a lot in order for the people here to have freedom, but also for people like me to be able to come into this country. Like a lot has had to have happened for that to even be a possibility for me. So very, like very, very sobering. What I notice, you get to like this dome, which is called the Hall of Memory, and there's an unknown soldier who's been laid to rest in that space. But also that it's a really beautifully architecturally carved out dome. And what I noticed in, even though it's a dome, it's got like four kind of sides to it, one side being like the entrance, and then there's three additional sides, and those three sides have these almost, you know, super tall like stained glass windows almost in all three of these sides of about four or five, might have even been six qualities. There's five personal qualities that are mentioned on one wall. Then there's five social qualities on another wall. And then there's fighting qualities on another wall again. And what I noticed watching and reading through all of these is just how many of these qualities are actually linked to virtues and virtues that we don't talk about in any other space in our culture anymore.
Sure.
When I look at the War Memorial and I see these virtues being upheld or qualities that come from these virtues that are being upheld, I go, wow, there was a very clear connection here between what these people were doing, what these people were offering,
yes.
why these people went and did what they did, and the virtues that they were then embraced for having lived or having tried to live.
Right, right.
And yet
right.
when you look at the rest of the world now, we don't talk about those very qualities that we uphold when it comes to our soldiers who fight, our, you know, those who went into battle, those who lost lives,
yeah, yeah.
lay down their lives. We don't talk about that anymore.
No. No, how right you are. I think those are virtues that make us quite uncomfortable.
Mm.
Because they're virtues that call for noble sacrifice,
mm.
right? Which is something very contrary to the culture in which we live.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that there aren't people who are, you know, who give of themselves. There very clearly are. I mean, you've got some really, you know, wonderful people doing some really wonderful work, and that's great. And they're to be commended for their work.
Yeah.
But culturally, we don't extol the virtues of sacrifice for a greater cause, for something that is in fact greater than ourselves.
Mm.
It's just not something that's being really promoted at the moment.
Mm. Mm.
There's much more of a sort of almost like the priority of the micro narrative, for lack of a better word, a priority of my story over the broader story.
Yeah. Or I'm also thinking, There are sectors that do push for this. Like I'm thinking philanthropy, for example.
Mm.
That's very much pushed for in the business world in general. We have a lot of businesses now, whether they could be creating products that are tech products, but they'll have a social impact that's connected to them selling products that's actually about them, you know, feeding someone out in some third world country.
Why?
Why? Because they need to be seen to be doing good.
Right.
I imagine. Or, right. you know.
And I think that's what I, sorry, go on.
But the point I'm trying to make is I think there's a removal. I think what you're saying in terms of being uncomfortable is that these people who were trying to live out these virtues that we are exemplifying them for, lived it themselves in and through their lives, in and through the actions they themselves took. It didn't take a third party.
No.
There wasn't someone else that was kind of in the middle, which yeah. is what happens with a lot of philanthropy now. It's yeah. not – very few people actually go out like Mother Teresa
yeah. Yeah.
and actually do
yeah.
the ugly, messy work of yeah. tending to those who are poor and – undernourished and, you know, need that kind of loving care.
Yep.
But we have plenty of people who are financially able to go and pay for other people to go and do
yes.
that. So there's
yes.
there's something
yes.
that creates that comfort again.
Yeah.
That takes yeah. away that discomfort I think you're talking
saying.
About.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. 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 That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
But you were making a point.
Just that there's a micro narrative there that's preferred, like the company.
Mm.
A micro narrative might not be the right word, but there's a you know, the company does what it does because it wants to look good.
I'm
cynical there, but I don't believe that Apple, which simultaneously it was like, oh, we're doing so well with our carbon footprint, and at the same time is like, yeah, and we also own sweatshops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, forgive me if I don't believe a word you say, Apple.
Yeah, it's you not know, congruent,
says
is
the
it?
The guy who owns an Apple computer.
yes.
Yeah, sorry about that. clearly, I have bought into the cult of Apple.
Don't get me started on
but, that. but like the fact remains that so much of that sort of thing that you're talking about is more for show than it is reality, right? And I think that's because there's the story of self is so much more important than the story of something greater than oneself.
Mm-hmm.
Serving oneself and looking good is so much more important. And I think that plays out at a corporate level. But I think it plays out also, this is a bit challenging to say, but I think it plays out also in our own lives, right? I mean, it plays out at a cultural level, which means that it plays out in my life and other lives too. And yes. That's for sure.
I mean, it just take this podcasting, right? Like, do we sit here and curate content because we want to please a community, or are we creating content that we feel, you know, this is a need,
right?
And we feel like God is actually calling us to speak into this space.
Right.
Exactly. What are we doing this for?
Exactly. One thing that's interesting to note is that you mentioned the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Yeah.
It has an inscription on it, which I will probably butcher, but something to the effect of the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, known only to God.
Yeah.
Now that sentence to our American brethren is probably nothing at all. But here in Australia, that's a big deal.
That's a bold thing.
Because we do not have religious statements in public life. Like Anzac Day and the War Memorial are the only exceptions to that rule.
Yeah. Right?
We are an extraordinarily, my bishop isn't going to like me saying this, but it's true. I'm sorry, Bishop Mark. We are an extraordinarily anti-religious society. We are.
There's a shifting coming.
There's shifting coming. Yeah. But the fact is that we are an anti-religious religious society, which sounds like a contradiction in terms, but we're anti-religion in the sense of a rejection of quote-unquote organized religion, but we can't get rid of the religious sense that is actually deeply etched into the human heart, right? So our religious sense comes out in other rituals and other things that we do, which are a poor imitation of what they're meant to be, but that's what winds up happening. The question I think that sort of comes up from everything that we've just said there, which is a lot. We just said a lot.
Yeah.
The question that comes up for me is, how do we foster the very things that we're saying are present in the Anzacs, that are present in those soldiers who, as you have identified, fought and died for us? How do we foster those things so that we're not just concerned about our own little narratives, our own little lives, but we're looking more broadly at how do I actually engage another in service?
Yeah.
Not just throwing money at a problem, but
throwing
myself at it and going, how can I actually serve this person? How can I actually engage this issue?
Yeah.
And so how do we foster valor, virtue, and self-sacrifice in a world which is largely pro-comfort and pro-self? How do we do that? I think that's what we want to focus on today.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the first thing to start with, we're talking about a pro-comfort world that we live in. Well, we have to challenge that comfort to start with.
Right.
And I think to some degree we actually already do this in some areas of our lives. Like I'm thinking about the shift that we've had in the health focus in the last maybe close to a decade, a bit less maybe. And I'm thinking, you know, the very clear shift we've had in not just health and well-being as in just so long as I'm putting into my system what it needs to be nourished and I do a little bit of walking here and there, like I'm maintaining health.
Yeah,
but
sure.
We're seeing like actual physical transformations, like bodily transformations happening that are more than just the healthy. And there's a range of healthy as well, right? But
sure.
It is getting further and further into like body sculpting kind of space,
sure,
which is
sure.
more than just what is necessary to maintain
yeah.
good health.
Yeah.
It's pushing the body
yeah.
to, you know, how far can I actually push that?
Yeah.
How much more can I get out of it? So there is a sense of challenge in that. And we also see that with the number of gyms that are popping up. Like, have you seen yeah. how many pop yeah. up? It's almost like, let's get rid of all the pubs and just put gyms everywhere on every corner. It's crazy how many of them. Mm. But also, you know, I know, but it's starting to look that way. Like, once upon a time, there was a pub on every corner. Now there's a gym on every corner.
I don't want my pub to go.
I'm not saying let's do it.
I particularly don't want my pub to be replaced by a gym. That'd be like my worst nightmare.
Yeah, okay. I'm not saying let's do it.
Sure, sure.
But
sure.
It is kind of starting to look that way. Once upon a time, we had so many pubs, and
it's
now
true.
The gyms are kind of becoming the more commonplace.
100%. Yeah, no, you're quite right.
But even a shift in like the younger generations, they're not drinking as much.
It's actually an interesting thing, isn't it? It's utterly true. I noticed that when I was chaplain at St. Francis College at Charles Sturt University here, they're not drinking as much.
No.
Like when I was a student at university.
Yep.
Oh, we did some dumb things.
Yeah.
Mostly alcohol related things.
Yeah.
Like
regrettable things.
Just regrettable things. Yeah. Right. Things that aren't suited for a podcast. It's PG. Like,
no,
it's
not suited for life. But anyway,
no. Exactly. Right. So you know, it's completely insane.
Mm.
You know how I managed to survive, I don't quite know. But
yeah, okay.
You probably need to cut that bit out. Sorry, but probably cut it all out, honestly.
But yes, they are drinking less, and the reality is, kombucha's become like a huge deal, like health drinks, and you know. Once upon a time, it was just water and your energy drink to keep you going.
Yeah.
Now we've got all these extra options.
What's a kombucha again?
Just tea, sugar, bacteria, and yeast.
Yeah, right.
So it's like an offshoot of tea, I suppose.
Mm.
Yeah, so a fermented offshoot of tea.
Okay.
What we're going to call it.
Sure.
So in terms of challenge, we do actually have that part of it.
Sure.
Already naturally happening.
Yeah.
And that's definitely one way that we can push ourselves is to push our body to do a little bit more than what the comfort is, how far you push it. There may be some prudence required there.
Sure.
But I think focusing on just the body is too limiting. Yeah. Because what I also see is plenty of people who do hit the gym quite frequently, and they're really starting, like their body's really shifting and becoming physically a lot stronger, and that's becoming evident. And their energy levels are a lot higher. Mm. But I also see that these people aren't necessarily the most confident people on the planet. They're also not, they don't necessarily have the highest level of self-esteem or have a sense of having big dreams and big goals to pursue, which to me feels like a mismatch, because these are people that I look at and go, wow, like you must be super disciplined to be able to get your body to this particular space. Like, wow, that's got to take some serious self-discipline, some serious routines in place, some serious habit and accountability for yourself. And like, if you can get that down pat, like, wow, you could do tremendous things. And yet I don't see it necessarily go beyond the body. So I think there is, yes, it's good, push our body, but is it enough to just challenge our physical bodies?
Right. And right. So this is then, you know, pushing ourselves out of our comfort zones, right?
Mm.
And, you know, that is where growth exists in more than just the physical. Mental game, your emotional world, your career progression, relationships, a holistic sense of challenge, right?
Yeah.
And a holistic sense of challenge naturally orients us towards striving for that which is good.
Mm.
And for instance, valor, right? So being brave in difficult circumstances, especially battle, you know, thinking about Danzac. Mm. But that only comes about because we first have the habit of facing up the challenges which seem beyond us in some way.
Yeah.
I think that's part of what separates the older generation from the younger to some degree.
Mm.
I mean, when I think about my father's generation, I mean, Dad grew up in the Great Depression. Mm. You know, like that's I suppose theoretically the Depression was over according to history books, but
yeah,
anyone sure. who was actually living during that period knows that the history books are woefully inaccurate. You know, he was living very much with the effects of that, and they had to scrape by, they had to make do. You know, like shoes were a thing of luxury for the rich. Yeah, I mean, these days no one goes without shoes.
Yeah,
you know, and if you had a TV, whoa, dude.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, if you owned a car, whoo, that boy's rich. Mm. Like you know, it's. It's sort of, you know, poverty was a reality for most people, and you have to struggle to live.
Mm.
You know, just living day to day was a real challenge. Mm-hmm. Today, it's also a real challenge, but for very different reasons. And you know, it's we don't have the same poverty line that we once had. But the reasons I think that's hard to live today are more emotional and mental and spiritual than they are perhaps the really great physical and mental challenges that were faced with the previous generation. Mm. So there's valor to be found in the older generation. Like they know what it is to fight. And they know what it is to have really hard circumstances put in front of them.
Yeah.
Whereas I think we've had a generation that have grown up. I mean, I know myself. I had it pretty easy. Mm. I had it pretty easy. Mm. You know, like it's. I always knew where my next meal was coming from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was never a moment where I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, I've never known genuine poverty, really. Mm. You know, it's just a different set of circumstances, you know, and it's meant that there are different challenges and those challenges have perhaps made it harder to form that virtue of valor because I haven't had to battle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, different battle.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's that habit of facing up to difficult challenges which seem beyond us in some way is actually really important.
Mm.
And by being brave, I don't mean sort of foolishly running into a fight or, you know, jumping out of a plane, for instance, but seeing some physical or mental or emotional or spiritual difficulty or a combo of those, as that often is the case, and going, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can do this.
Yeah.
I might fail, and that's okay.
Mm.
I'll learn from the failure. I might succeed. And that might bring more challenge. And that's okay. I'll face those too. And on what basis can we face these? Well, the Roman historian Tacitus gives us an idea. He says, in valor, there is hope.
Mm.
Right? And so when we strive for a difficult thing, we develop that virtue of hope in us, which in turn develops our self-confidence. Mm. If we can place our eyes towards a goal, striving for it, undaunted by challenge, if we can place our eyes towards this goal, sustained by the goal itself, then we grow in confidence because we perpetually learn that we have the ability to tackle even the most difficult and grueling task. However, what goal is there that is so lofty, so noble, and so good that it actually sustains us in hope as we endure difficulty?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that is only God.
Yeah.
Like that's it.
Yeah.
And I do believe that is what prior generations have, that it's what they've got on us.
Mm.
That we don't have today is that great sense of hope in God, which allowed them to face a challenge and go, yeah, I can do this.
Yeah.
I can do this.
Yeah.
Because I know that my ultimate goal my ultimate hope isn't here.
Mm.
You know.
Mm.
And the last thing I want to do is to go, yeah, we need to go back to the 50s. Like, I don't want to say, I don't want to present this as an antiquarian mentality that everything old is good.
Yeah.
No offense if you're old, I'm sure you're great, but that's not my point.
Yeah,
right?
We're not going backwards in time.
We don't want to be going backwards in time, but at the same time, we do need to be able to look back and go, how is it these guys were so strong? How is it they were able to build the things that they've built? And how is it now, oh gosh, we're going to get in trouble for saying this, but I think it needs to be said. You know, how is it that I can go to a university and be like, no, I don't want to hear opinions that are going to upset me? Oh, well, sweetness, I'm sorry, but.
Yeah,
You're not going to survive in the world.
Yeah, we've become overly sensitive.
We've become so highly, like, how did we get from, yeah, you know what, we're going to go and fight, and we're going to fight for freedom and for liberty, and we're going to make enormous economic advances and build incredible structures and. We're going to do what was thought impossible, and we're, like how do we go from that to, I don't want to hear ideas that are going to upset me? Like, whoa,
yeah,
that's a jump,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. And I think that the biggest thing that's within that is the loss of God.
Mm.
You know, the loss of hope in God is like, well, I can't tolerate anything that challenges me, because what else do I have but my little narrative, my little world.
Yep.
Anything challenges that, my entire foundation is shaken.
Yep. Yep. And it will be.
Right? Right?
Yeah.
Whereas if we have God, we can go, no, I can, what, there's an idea that's challenging me? All right, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's do this thing.
We can face the challenge.
Let's face that challenge. Right.
Yeah.
So, God is that hope that sustains us in the great challenges that we face, that enables valor and so he must be our final good, the good that we're always aiming for, and all other goals must be a footnote to him.
Mm, mm, yeah. Mm, yeah. Yeah. I guess another thing too, we're talking about how do we kind of get out of the comfort zone. Another thing too is probably service. It's become like the less popular choice. We know that volunteering is becoming more and more scarce. It's not really deemed as valuable anymore to do volunteering work, which, you know, to some degree is a bit of a shame.
Oh, absolutely.
And this kind of brings me back to what we were talking about before in terms of social impact and financial contribution that seems to have kind of taken over. The volunteering space is people who have the funds, and good, they're making generous contribution. Mm. But that's kind of become the new form of altruism.
Absolutely.
It's less about the time or energy a person has to offer, and it's instead about, well, how big is a check that's going to get offered, and to what social impact, what's the next thing that we're going to focus our energy on. And nearly every business now has a section of, you know, financial generosity that I was saying before. For some people, it's like, let's, you know, and it could be, what I don't understand is just how random it could be with some of them. Like they could be, you know, selling ink cartridges, but their social impact is to save pandas. What? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, where is your connection there? What, why?
Save some trees, man. Save some trees.
Right. So some of them can be a bit strange. Yeah. Others can be a bit more meaningful, like what is it? Orange Sky, the laundry
service,
for example.
Yes.
So that's a more local initiative, as in national local initiative. So there are a lot more local organisations who partner with organisations like that because they are local. They're you know, close to our, so that they can make connections like that. But yeah, there's also some that are really strange, and it's strange that that's the kind of service we're promoting now in terms of replacing that volunteering service.
A money service, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. This actually points towards an important aspect of Christological anthropology.
Okay.
It points towards a Christian understanding of the human person and the way that we interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's missing from that very corporatized version of service, what's missing from the I'm going to give money to this thing as my alms, you know, and look, I'm not decrying that. I don't think we're saying here, oh, it's bad to give money. No. That's not the point.
Be generous.
Be generous with money by all means. It's part of why God's given it to us, right? But I think to have service only in the context of the giving of money misses a very incarnational thing.
Mm.
It misses a very fleshly thing, which is that we're actually meant to encounter those who are in need.
Mm.
It's there can be something neat about being able to give money to a problem and be like, okay, I did my bit,
mm.
right? When in fact, what we might be being called to is encounter this person,
mm.
sit with this person,
mm.
you know, and
that's the hard work.
Absolutely, mm. absolutely. You know, it's that stuff matters. You know, and as I say, so does being able to give from the storehouse of your treasury. Absolutely, but to be able to encounter someone bodily. You know, person to person, this is so important because it actually lets another person know that they're valued in a way which nothing else can.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, there's something there. I mean, in a sense, because that can be a bit offensive to someone who's monetarily offering what they have and then kind of hearing, well, actually, is that not showing people that they're of value? Is that money not indicating to the person that they're a value?
I think it indicates a value, but not in the profound way that it does from person to person.
Because, I mean, what that money will do is help to rescue the person
in some way,
whether that be pulling them out of hunger for a little while or pulling them out of a housing situation for a little while.
Yeah.
But it's not doing what you're saying.
That's right. And this is precisely why the whole – social justice gospel is pure nonsense. The gospel of Jesus Christ, which encapsulates a social justice dimension, is awesome.
Yeah.
But the social justice gospel, which says that the greatest thing that you can do is to give someone money or a handout or a hand up, Or alternatively, to even meet some material, to do an extraordinarily philanthropic work and go out into the streets and meet some human social need, that doesn't meet the deepest need.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Mm.
The reason why Mother Teresa was so astounding was not because she looked after the poorest of the poor from a merely human perspective.
Mm.
The reason why she was so profound is that she saw Christ in those who are suffering.
Yeah.
That's what makes her profound.
Yeah.
That's what makes that work profound. And it's what speaks to that anthropology of who am I in the light of Christ? The fact that I can actually meet someone and serve them and the manner in which I serve them actually speaks to who they are as a son of God. That is gospel value. That is gospel truth. To just meet a need, with a smile for that matter, without addressing that deeper reality, misses the core of what authentic Christian service is actually meant to be.
Mm.
And so that's, in many ways, this is the challenge then, to focus only on the notion of social justice from a purely horizontal and human plane without any reference to that Christological reality of who we are in the sight of God is to completely and totally miss Christian service.
Mm.
So that's the challenge that I would set out to any Christian school that has a social justice element is check over any Christian organization. Yeah, check over it. Does it actually meet the gospel standard of social justice or does it have a version of social justice that is perhaps, to use an uncomfortable phrase, a bit more atheistic than we'd care to admit?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is the whole idea of kind of neutering the Christian message here.
You bet your bottom dollar. Sorry. Oh, gosh. I'm so antagonistic tonight.
We know whose fault it is. So, I mean, yeah, it's this whole idea that we're kind of taking out the call of what it means to actually be Christian, the demands that the Christian life actually place on us, and what you're expected of us, what we're called into, kind of replacing that with just, kind of slogans. Christianity is just being kind. That's all we got to do, just have to be kind. It's all about love and acceptance. So we just have to accept everyone for whatever and whenever and however. Christ was inclusive, totally included everyone in everything, in all manner. So we must do the same. We must include everyone, no matter what their opinions or lifestyles or choices may be. But they kind of miss the point, is what you're saying. They kind of just miss it. Because although, yes, we do have to be kind. We are called into that. And yes, we are definitely called to love. And we are required to be open to everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Christ did include everyone. He does call everyone
He's utterly inclusive.
Yeah. Didn't kind of turn anyone away because of, their marital status or because of their race or anything like that. He wasn't keeping anyone at a distance.
Absolutely not. It is helpful to remember one of the definitions of heresy, which is to take a truth and set it up as truth.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So was Christ all-inclusive insofar as he wants everyone to know him? Yeah, of course. Race, creed, marital status. Is it relevant to him? He's like, come on.
Yeah.
Be my disciple.
Yeah.
However, discipleship had boundaries.
Yeah.
If you wish to be my disciple, what must you do? Take up your cross and follow me. What must I do to go to heaven? Keep the commandments.
Yeah.
Right? Does no one condemn you, daughter? Neither do I. Go and sin no more.
Mm.
Right. So clearly for Christ, discipleship has boundaries, and as every healthy relationship does, right? This is what it looks like to be a follower of Christ. I can't just make it up as I go along. And typically what's happened in the past is that there's been this tendency to make Christ into this revolutionary figure who was trying to overthrow the powerful and to hold up those who were considered downtrodden and weak, to overthrow a moral order So get rid of the moral demands.
And
what we have is just a Christ who's like, oh, are you downtrodden? Well, you're okay. You're my disciple because you're downtrodden. We're disciples of the Lord because he has called us, because he loves, and he calls everyone. He's loving. He is inclusive. But then it's up to us to hear that call, to respond to that call, and to respond in the manner that he articulates.
Yeah.
Repent and believe in the gospel.
Yeah.
That's the essence of Christ's message there. And I think we take that away sometimes in order to be like, well, it's so hard to be Christian these days. We don't want to scare people away. It is hard to be Christian these days. But you know what? That's not a great surprise since the figure of our religion is a guy nailed to a cross.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, let's be real here.
Yeah.
Yes, it's hard to be Christian.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's ever not been.
Yeah. And also scare people away. Yeah. What do you think his closest friends did? They all ran away.
They all did
all
a runner.
But one of them, but. Yeah.
They all did a runner.
Yeah.
And I'd have been no different.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think if we actually buy that Christianity is about love, then we also need to buy that love, genuine love, makes demands.
Yes.
Makes demands. Because what it says is to love is to be as Christ. How does Christ love? He puts himself on a cross.
Yeah.
Right? So it makes a demand of us to go, okay, if you're going to love, than what this demands, what this actually requires, is a gift of yourself, mm-hmm. is a giving of yourself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's scary.
Yeah. And that's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. Right?
Yeah.
But that is the stuff that leads to service and leads to valor. That's the stuff that actually we can go, you know what? This is scary, but I can be brave.
Yeah.
This is scary, but I can serve.
Yeah.
You know, we cannot neuter the Christian message. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, there it is.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for listening. I feel as though I don't know if I said anything that made any sense at all during that episode, but alas, here we are.
Yeah.
So yeah.
No, it's good. It's good. Truth be in goodness.
Yes.
So I had a moment today with one of my pre-marriage counseling couples. And I'd been stewing over, like, there was a particular thing I needed to bring up with them. And I'd been stewing over how do I bring this up efficiently, because we've only got a limited number of sessions, so it needs to happen pretty quick.
Yeah.
But also I don't want them very early on feeling like I'm judging them, because that's not what's happening here. So I had to have – and also not scaring them.
Yeah.
I don't want to freak them out.
Yeah, sure.
But,
sure.
You know, there were some things that I needed to kind of address with them, that, hey, there's some growth areas here. And one of these is going to come as a rude shock at some point. So let me prepare you. You kind of roll with what's happening and you kind of go with it. So I just prayed before I went in there. I went, Lord, I've got very little left in me today. I'm not sure how to do this. Help me out here. And we just kind of talked away, and we naturally started talking about certain things. And I put a couple of questions in here and there that kind of led somewhere. The truth, beauty, goodness section for me of that encounter is just how tangibly God works in my sessions, even in moments where I go, I don't know what to do here, or I have very little left to give and I don't know how I'm going to tackle this
actually
thing.
Actually do this thing.
Actually, the thing that I need to do is to just pray.
And
then God kind of takes care of the rest. What about you?
Yes, I have a resource, and it's a resource from a favorite author of mine, which is going to be a surprise from nobody at all. But it's a work from Hugo Rana. Called Our Lady and the Church. Now, if the last name sounds familiar to you, it's it is a – his brother is called Karl Rahner, who's a theologian of great notoriety. His brother – I didn't get his brother. Like, his brother leaves me going, huh? I just – okay. I don't get him.
Yeah.
There are sometimes I read him and I'm like, oh, that's really nice. But there's other times I read him and I'm like, I've read that 7 times and I still don't understand what he's saying. Like, he's just completely above where I'm at.
Yeah.
Right. So, but his brother has the clarity of someone like Ratzinger and just makes a whole lot of sense to me. He makes this really really beautiful work called Our Lady in the Church.
Mm.
And presents Mary so beautifully, both as a daughter and as a mother, you know, and presents her fidelity as the source of both of those.
Aww.
And it's just so it's one of those books that you read and you go, oh, this guy really loves Mary.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like you get that great sense of tenderness. He's speaking from having a relationship.
Mm.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Mm. So get it. Read it. It's good.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
Easier to understand than his brother.
Damn straight.
Good to know. All righty. Well, thanks for joining us for another week on the Living Fullness podcast. We will catch you again next week. But until then, know our love and grace.